and stay tuned for another edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides, a special live link-up with Portland, Oregon. Stay with us. And you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. It is May 16, 2002, and we have a cramped, packed, rockin' studio here. We're going to kind of introduce a few people and go directly to the show, most of which is going to be taken up with a live broadcast to Portland, Oregon. Actually, they're going to be recording at that end. We're broadcasting live at this end. KBOO, K-B-O-O, is broadcasting up there, hopefully at another time after they've done the recording. The issue is civil rights for homeless people. I'm your host, Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norse, and you're tuned to 96.3 FM. For 2 hours, you're going to be listening to this special edition of Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides, I hope. And let me introduce the folks in the studio. Let's start with this strange-looking fellow in the black leather hat. What's your name, sir?
Larry Templeton.
And just what is your association here? What do you do, anyway?
Well, I'm the founder of Camp Paradise and the co-director of the Santa Cruz Service Corps.
Okay, well, that sounds reasonable enough. And you actually made it to the summit every so often, though you missed the main day, you bad boy.
Yeah, I made it, yeah.
You did get there, and you gave an introduction on Friday night, I remember.
Yes.
And you offered you set your whole camp up to help Dignity Village, the folks who came all the way down from Portland, Oregon, to share information. And we're going to talk about how that worked. Next, we have in the studio Tom Shaver of the Santa Cruz Service Corps. Also, hey, Tom.
Hello. How's it going?
Looks like it's going good. You were there for, I guess, most of the day Saturday 2 weeks ago in back of Thomas Levitt's house, where we had about 50 to 100 people who were joining together to discuss how is it that homeless people can survive and flourish in a society that criminalizes them.
Yeah, it was really great to meet all the folks from Dignity Village and Isla Vista and Seattle and share information and get some solidarity going together with all the 10 cities up and down the West Coast.
Yeah, and of course we're going to be kind of, part of what we're going to be doing is following up on that and seeing what came out of that conference. With us also in the studio is attorney Chris Fredrickson, also a graduate of Camp Paradise. Hey Chris, are you sad that you're no longer out there camping with Larry? Grab that mic.
I'm grabbing the mic, I'm trying not to swallow it as instructed.
You can lick it, but don't swallow it, okay? So you've been an attorney for a while, and you're back on board defending homeless people in Santa Cruz?
That's correct.
And I know that I actually ran into you at a Huff meeting yesterday where you are, I guess, looking into the case of a fellow who's being harassed for putting up a sign by the side of the freeway?
Yes, the flying the sign defenses.
In other words, having a sign that says, "Will work for food," or spare change is apparently being treated as criminal behavior in Santa Cruz.
Correct.
So, we also have in the studio, last but not least, to hanging by the door, you. Introduce yourself over there. They're all kind of crowding around the same mics here.
Sherry.
Hey, Sherry. How long have you been with Camp Paradise?
I've been with Camp Paradise for about 4 months. Probably longer than that.
Well, is it getting boring? What do you think?
Pardon?
Is it getting boring?
Oh, no, never a dull moment.
Well, this is going to be a pretty exciting show because we're going to run through a lot of stuff. Now, for you folks in Santa Cruz, we are really focusing a lot on Portland, Oregon, because Portland is fighting a series of anti-homeless law changes to a thing called Title 14. And Title 14 is actually a whole section of the law which has to do with the criminal code. And it's being completely overhauled in part to deal with a decision by Judge Gallagher. Judge Gallagher 2 years ago made a decision that legalized camping in Portland, Oregon, threw out the camping ban. In Santa Cruz we have both a camping ban and also, strangely enough, a sleeping ban. You can't camp and you can't sleep in your own vehicle or anywhere on public property in Santa Cruz. The camping ban, however, was overturned in Oregon in September of 2000 by Judge Gallagher, who found the ordinance to be in violation of the U.S. Constitution because those without homes were being punished for the status of being homeless. It was also found to be in violation of equal protection and the fundamental right to travel by denying homeless people the opportunity to possess their belongings. And it was in the case of Norman Wicks Sr. and his son Norman Wicks Jr. living in their vehicles, parked nightly at various locations in Portland, which the case centered on. That was the case, in fact. Portland police, over a brief period of time, had given them 40 citations. And interestingly enough, and this is, of course, a key difference between Santa Cruz and Portland, it would have been legal for the Wicks to sleep in their truck had they had a home to live in. So in Santa Cruz, it's illegal even if you do have a home, so they can claim, oh, see, everybody, the rich and the poor, both have the right to sleep in the streets in a bag and be under the bridges. Of course, you can't be under the bridges in Santa Cruz. That has been updated. But in Portland, Oregon, they threw out the camping ordinance, and in its place, Title 14 changes are coming in and being fought, and as I understand it, being fought successfully in Portland, Oregon. And we're soon going to be getting a call from Portland, Oregon, that will hook us up with KBOO in Portland to really do a roundtable discussion of a number of questions. And these questions are going to include, one, what came out of the Right to Sleep Summit? Looks like the phone is ringing right now. Two, what successful strategies are being used in Portland to fight Title 14. Three, what about the broader relationship between homeless people and encampments, the kinds of frictions that occur because people in homeless encampments are getting a sense of community and success that people in the broader homeless community may not be getting, or maybe a sense of favoritism. And what about activists versus survivalists? Do you have to be an activist to have the right to survive? What kind of problems arise in the context of people who just want to live, but they're forced into the position of fighting to make changes in the law. Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hey, can I speak to Robert North, please?
You are.
All right, cool. I'm Liam. I'm calling from KBOO in Portland.
Good to hear you.
All right. So, are you in we're ready to go on this.
I think we're almost ready here. We have a little problem with distortion. Let me just sort of get things set up. Here's a set of earphones that people are going to have to kind of share if we really go bad at this end. You have a big station. We have a primitive kind of water closet-sized underground station here. We're talking to Liam?
That's right. Or maybe you should talk to Denise.
Okay, let's go to Denise. Can everybody hear?
Robert?
Hey.
Hey, so what's the scoop?
Well, it looks like we're go here. We have four people in the studio. You're actually live on the air as we speak.
Excellent. Well, let me get those folks ready and stand by for just a moment.
Sure. And as you can hear out there, you will be listening to essentially an hour and a half of interchange between folks in Portland, Oregon, and folks who are...
That's better.
Here in Santa Cruz. We have... One of the problems we're going to have is we have microphones, only one telephone. So we're going to pass around the phone, and you can hear it. But the trouble is they can't hear you when you talk. I don't think into the mic. That's going to be the problem. We struggle with our technical problems. Hi, how are we doing at that end?
Hello, Robert.
Hey, is this Jack Tafari?
Yeah, man, this is Jack Tafari. How you doing, Doc?
We're good. Let's see how we're doing. Can you hear? You probably can't. You can only hear through the phone line, right?
Well, I'm going to tell you something. Everybody sitting around this table can hear every word you say.
That's great. Well, now we'll see if they can hear anything off. Say something over there, folks.
Hey, Jack, how's it going?
Hey, Jack, can you hear us?
Yeah, is that Larry?
Hey, that's me.
Yo, Larry, how you doing, Dad?
I'm doing good, buddy. Missed
you. Yeah, man, it's all good, you know. Hey, sorry, we missed you the other day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess are we ready to roll at that end?
Yeah, it's all good here.
Okay. All right, so let's see, where are we going to start? Maybe what we should do is have everybody introduce themselves. We've already gone through the roster here in the studio. We have Larry Templeton of Camp Paradise, Tom Shaver of the Santa Cruz Service Corps, Chris Fredrickson of the, former Camp Paradise graduate and attorney, and
Sherry,
a Camp Paradise resident as well, whose name eventually I'll remember. Who's on at your end?
On this end, Robert, we have the one Patty Ann of Street Roots Reporter, and we have Mikey D, from also from Street Roots Whiteland, and we have the one Watchman from the Crossroads Gathering. That's a project that's doing a lot of analysis on Title 14, and we have the one Adam. I believe you know Adam from San Francisco, and Adam, let me let Adam introduce himself.
This is Adam Arms.
Adam Arms, a notorious attorney, once of San Francisco.
That's correct. Now with Metropolitan Public Defender here in Portland.
Excellent, excellent. Man fighting Title 14, I imagine.
We're trying.
Huh. Okay. We've gotten some of the faxes on Title 14. Some of them didn't arrive today, but we have, I think, enough to sort of kick things off. And I think the first question I'd like to ask let's start with Title 14. What is Title 14 in Portland, Oregon? Why is it important that we be concerned about it here in Santa Cruz? Or should we be?
Well, I think that people should be concerned about Title 14 type city and state ordinances and laws all around the country, because they are basically governing public conduct, how you behave outdoors, in parks, on the sidewalks and streets. And Title 14, specifically in Portland, is that part of the city code that is aimed at the homeless, in that it's trying to sweep the streets of the homeless by making it criminal for almost any kind of act that people who have homes normally would do indoors. And I guess the best way to describe it is to tell you about of 10 or 12 of the Title 14 sections that we've been opposing in a concerted effort over the months.
You are, by the way.
This is Patty.
Hey, Patty. You were a reporter who actually came down doing work for Street Roots during the Right to Sleep Summit a couple weeks ago.
Right.
Go ahead.
Okay, so there's been a lot of media coverage of Title 14 because the very astute attorneys, including Adam and Mark Jolin and Andrea Meyer of the ACLU up here, happened to see what was being quietly developed and put through City Council was going to be put into law without any public hearing. And it's about a 200-page document, and line by line, they read through it and picked out what seemed really troublesome, what seemed to have vague language, or that would be criminalizing some pretty normal kinds of human behaviors.
Patty, what I noticed when I looked at this, you sent me a letter on January 15th, or somebody did, to Commissioner Sten, and it has a number of really draconian provisions, or did then. One was expanding the definition of a police officer to a bunch of people who weren't really particularly trained as cops, doubling the maximum fine for violations, creating peculiar crimes of not just spitting on the sidewalk, but attempting to spit, conspiring to spit, and soliciting to spit, if you will. Quadrupling the number of crimes, adding what's called liability crimes for aiding, abetting, suffering, or concealing spitting, changing the process of obstructing the sidewalk. So now it's not just if you intentionally obstruct the sidewalk that's a crime, but it would be, at least under these proposed changes, you'd be obstructing it if you would cause a pedestrian to
or any other user to have to walk to another part of the sidewalk to avoid you. So that means any time a person who stands, sits, or lies, even if they're not intending to block the sidewalk, they can still be accused of it. Unlawful sitting on a bench. You can't sit, lie, stand, climb, or otherwise use any publicly owned monument, trash can, water feature, wall, bench, picnic table, tree, or other public property. Then we have drinking in public places, whereas it's now, I guess you have an open container law. A closed container law would be the case where you couldn't even have a closed bottle of wine in the park, according to this proposed change. Prohibitions on conducting businesses, whereas now you have a zone that limits people from vending, even things like street routes, your local paper, although maybe there's an exception for that. This would expand it to the entire, prohibit any activity on any public property without a permit. It would make it a crime to commit substance abuse crimes on public property. So it's a crime to commit a crime. It's not just a crime to use a drug, but it's a crime to commit the crime of using the drug. Am I with you? Are you with me here? Am I accurate in my reading skills here? Or?
Pretty close.
Criminalizing parole and probation violations would be another entirely new law where a violation of a parole or probation condition committed on public property would be subject to criminal prosecution. And here, let me tone me down a little bit here. We have a little problem with our board here. The possible conditions are, I guess it would increase sanctions against folks for parole and probation, failing to obey a police officer's reasonable directions while in a park, searching closed containers, drug and prostitution free zones, and broadening the Peeping Tom law. But you said that this was back in January, so there's lots of changes in this criminal code, but not all these changes are now being pushed forward, is that right?
Well, there was a very good organized effort that has grown and seems to be, we hope, succeeding in defeating these proposals because they're not law yet. Some of these are on the books, but the language is being changed and they're stiffening these, and some are new. But all the ones that you mentioned and a few more are the ones that we've been most concerned about at our attorney's hold and Crossroads, which has a huge number of people under the directorship of Jenny Nelson, has made it their main project for the next several months, for however long it takes, to have lots of people opposing this. There is a hearing, the only set public hearing, coming up May 29th at City Hall, and we hope to pack City Hall on that date with people who sign up to speak against these proposals. But in the meantime, we have met with City Attorney this week, including yesterday, for almost 3 hours in a smaller committee of about five, and we delivered a letter on Monday to the mayor and city commissioners and city attorney, about 3 pages long with over 300 signatures that we gathered, opposing these ones that trouble us. And they didn't expect this.
It's because of your but the city attorney didn't decide to call you in because you were such experts or because he liked you. It was because you mobilized hundreds of people in a weekend blitz of signatures to the mayor that happened. Is that right?
That is correct.
And now, as I understand it properly, they have postponed at least some of these changes until public hearings later this summer, where previously they weren't going to hold public hearings at all.
That's right. Not only is there one public hearing being held on what's left of the proposed city code changes, but all of these that we're concerned about, for the most part, except for the camping ordinance, have been pulled for later consideration.
The camping ordinance. Why don't we kind of go back to that, and that'll give other people a chance to talk, too, because you and I have been, I mean, we sound good, but hey, we suppose we should let other people say something.
Right.
The camping ordinance, we have a camping ordinance in Santa Cruz, which it criminalizes setting up a campsite 24 hours a day, and also makes it a crime to actually fall asleep, whether you're in a campsite or not, if you're out of doors, or if you are in a vehicle, even if you're in a legally parked public space on any public property. So this means, of course, that 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people are criminalized, where we have only 40 space for 40 people on the floor at night in emergency shelter. The rest of them face $54 tickets if the police choose to move in, and they do so whenever they feel like it. Obviously, they can't afford to do it every time, because then the jails will be packed. We also have a blanket ban that criminalizes covering up with bedding. Maybe some of the folks here can talk talk a little bit about that. I know they didn't go after us while we were in the backyard, because it's legal to be in the backyard when we had our conference 2 weeks ago, and folks from Dignity Village actually camped out. I guess it wasn't Dignity Village, they went to the state parks, but some of the folks from Santa Barbara, Isla Vista, and Seattle may have spent some time there. Any comments on the Santa Cruz ordinances, hearing the kinds of ordinances that are being proposed in Portland, Chris or Tom, or anybody want to take that one? Or you don't have to. I can. No, it's, nobody wants to talk about the ordinances here, and I can understand why. I mean, my take on the ordinances is that, you know, we have one of the worst camping laws in the state, and the problem we have is on private property too. Unless you're on a backyard or a side yard, you can be criminalized for not just camping but for sleeping, and that's would seem to be, you know, cruel and unusual punishment, which I think is one of the grounds on which the Judge Gallagher in Portland overthrew your code. But what's been happening since up there? Maybe some of your folks can tell us how homeless people are being treated now that the police don't have the camping ordinance to go after them with.
Well, Adam defended the homeless for
Let me get you to speak up, Jack. We're having trouble hearing you.
We're losing that.
Listen to the earphones.
I'll just comment on what I've seen coming down, and that is that the police that we've seen are stretching out the trespassing law to try to incorporate people who they think are camping.
Yeah.
What happened up here on the Field of Dreams was there was a peaceful protest where folks were camping overnight, and the police came in, didn't know what to do with the folks there, you know, told them to leave and did some other things, and eventually they came by and gave them a notice. Right, well, they gave them a...
camping citation.
Well, they gave trespassing tickets after giving a... They gave them a pink sheet that said, you have 24 hours to move out, this is an illegal campground. And then 6 hours later, came by and gave them trespassing tickets. I think that just shows that they wanted to nail people for camping, but they're stretching out this trespassing law. And, you know, we had a trial and the folks were acquitted of trespassing because of the police mishandling of the whole thing and not knowing how to stretch out the law. But you see cases filtering in that where obviously the police are trying to enforce the camping law without using the camping law. It's only successful if people let it be successful. So.
Well, it's interesting that 2 years ago they threw out the camping law. Judge Gallagher did, and then I guess the city for a year said, doesn't matter, it's just a local judge, it's still on the books, and sometimes the police issued tickets. Is that correct?
I don't have any experience with tickets since then, but maybe someone else does.
Well, yeah, let me speak to that. The city, I heard yesterday from the city, as a matter of fact, it only applies to one case, the Wicks decision. It was a father and son camping in a vehicle, and Julie Stevens was the lawyer for that, lessened, right, you know, and she got it overturned. But they're saying it's a decision in one case. What happened in one court, a Multnomah lower circuit court, right? And what happened is the city appealed it right away within 10 days of it going down, but the city kind of wimped out, you know what I mean? They kind of like let it lapse, and then, well, they kind of forgot to file their information on time, and then they kind of withdrew it. Mm-hmm. So the whole thing is in kind of limbo. And what people want to do here, we want to test it on a state level. I think it's a very good piece of legislation. The grounds that it was gotten on were good, solid grounds, and we'd like to see it tested on a state level. So.
Can I just add one thing to that? Mm-hmm. And that is it's interesting how the city is saying, oh no, it's a good law still, that's only one decision. But in practice, they've cut back and they're looking for ways to get around it. So they feel that it's binding in some ways, and that's tested by, or that's seen by them trying to stretch out these other laws. And at least in a couple of instances where judges, like in our case, where the judge had the opportunity to overturn that, we brought that up in our brief. You know, we had the constitutional issues there. If if the if that judge or if any of the other judges who came up to these issues thought it was a bad idea and it was a bad decision and wanted to overturn it, they could have made a statement. But they are choosing to find people not guilty on other grounds, and they're not attacking that. So I think that shows that at least most of the judges that have seen the issue after the Gallagher decision think possibly that it's a good decision.
Right. Given the Field of Dreams cases, though, and the fact that other laws like trespass are being used, perhaps what's needed is an injunction along the lines of the Miami Federal Court's Pottinger decision that says any approach on homeless people without shelter space being available should be a no-no. Attorney Chris Fredrickson has a question here or a comment.
Hi. My question is, in spite of Gallagher and in spite of your observations that the judges seem to be leaving it alone, even though they're trying to broaden the grounds upon which they're ticketing, do you think that there's a trend, especially in light of the Title 14 legislation that they're trying to enact, do you think there's a trend going away from Gallagher and back to the criminalization of homelessness?
Definitely. There's also the drug-free zones here in Portland, but it's a whole other issue. But the first question that Robert asked was, why is Title 14 important and what is it? And I think that Title 14 is important because it just evidences that this city's becoming aware of what other cities are doing, and that's criminalizing homelessness as much as possible in any way possible. And trying to sneak this through sneak these laws through without any public process. And so I think what's happening up here is important because it's what's happening everywhere else. It's what happened in San Francisco a few years ago, and that they're implementing these tiny little city codes that will nickel and dime you until, you know, it's illegal to be homeless and walk down the sidewalk. So I guess in short, the short answer is, yes, they're trying to implement all of these laws that give these police the tools to knock homeless people out of downtown.
Can Gallagher hold, can Gallagher protect against this Title 14 once they finally get it enacted?
I don't think it doesn't set any formal precedent, but I think there's an informal precedent that it sets, at least among the Multnomah County judges. But I think it's good that we're all talking like this and sharing ideas, because it would be great to find out what other cities have done to put an injunction in place, like what happened in Florida, or, you know, just to see what's happening in other places to make it larger than one courtroom, one decision.
It certainly would. Yeah, we could use each other's help very much. Okay, I'll turn you back to Robert because he's grabbing the phone away from me.
Give me that phone. Okay, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. In the studio, strong but silent, are Sherry, Larry, Tom, Chris, and Robert on the Santa Cruz end. And on the other end, who we got at then, the other end there?
Mike D.
Jack Fry.
Patty.
Watchman.
Adam R.
Wow, that's a full contingent. You know, what we talked about at the summit is, you know, there was general kind of pessimism about being able to use the necessity defense, which is, of course, the law that says, or the common law practice that says, if you are engaging in illegal behavior but doing so to avert a greater evil, you can't be convicted. And this has been successful as a defense in Santa Barbara and in Albany, California, and is being tried. Chris Fredrickson, who you just heard, has been working on that with the Camp Paradise defendants here in Santa Cruz. Nonetheless, there was some pessimism at the conference about, you know, first of all, you need to get lawyers lined up who aren't terribly interested in taking a lot of pro bono cases. And then there's the question of how can you get, you know, are you going to sit around and wait for the courts to do this stuff? What don't you need, in essence, to engage and the kind of mass civil resistance that Martin Luther King was doing, for example, at Resurrection City in 1968 in Washington, where he had tens of thousands of people came to Washington from all kinds of different groups to essentially paralyze the federal government and the state governments who were engaging in criminalization of people until such time as they made the changes they needed to change to secure basic human rights. I mean, I think we have to adopt a wide variety of strategies. Any thoughts either from any people here or up in Portland on that question, because that was raised by activist Terry Messman of Street Spirit, the editor and keynote speaker at our conference. Any biters on that one?
If you don't have anybody over there, I can.
Go ahead. Who is speaking?
This is Mike D. with the Liberation Collective and Street Roots and some other organizations around here. I think it takes all fronts, whether it's direct action, people actually out there camping, people protesting with signs, people calling, writing their city government, their federal government, their state government. And one thing might be, like Martin Luther King did, is get a federal injunction saying that, you know what, you can't bother us. You got to leave us alone until you fix these problems.
Mm-hmm. In Portland, you seem to have gotten closest to that. I mean, Oregon seems to be quite an enlightened state, and Eugene, for at least 3 years during the mid-90s, you had the Centennial Car Camp. Eugene has a proposal where a limited number of people can sleep in their vehicles, and the city actually provides some limited facilities. And, of course, Portland's Gallagher decision has technically dumped the camping ordinance, but the problem seems to be, and this is, leads into my next question, what about the majority of homeless folks on the streets who aren't in encampments? I mean, the encampment, as I understand it, the originally Camp Dignity and then became Dignity Village, was set up after the Gallagher decision, in part because of logistical support from Street Roots newspaper, where you had to fight, and move constantly. Well, can you talk a little bit about the history of Dignity Village and how you have struggled with the criminalization to a sort of a quasi-legal status?
Well, what happened was, we started out with our shopping carts, and the ban was overturned, and it galvanized a lot of people who sort of rose up to the challenge that history kind of thrown down. This thing kind of got overturned, and wow, the police were all kind of confused. They were thrown into confusion for a few days. They didn't know what the hell to do. And so a bunch of us immediately began organizing. It was a lot of people from Street Roots, as you say, it came from Street Roots. It came from the doorways along Morrison Street, because a lot of us were sleeping in the doorways of Central City Concern there. And a lot of us slept, like, in the parking lot by TPI. And some of us slept, under the steel bridge and under the, we're sleeping under the steel bridge and under the Broadway bridge, But it brought a lot of people together. And organized it. First, we started organizing in Street Roots, but the office, it was just too small to hold the number of people, because it did galvanize a lot of people, so we moved to the Martial Arts Gallery. But initially, what we did was...
Try to speak up a little bit, could you check?
It took, like, determination. We were very, very determined, and we were all sleeping in doorways and crap anyway, right? So it seemed better to form up a campaign and try to get ourselves out of the doorways. And the way we did that was we, some very good people, Mike Broderick, guy with about a third grade education, he pulled in our first tents. John Reese had no legs, right, or he got his, John Reese got his leg amputated on the 4th of October. The camping ban was overturned on the 27th of September. Well, 4 days later, John Reese is a Vietnam veteran. They had him back recovering under the bridge. The loss of his leg, and that kind of brought on support for us, and we were just determined, and we kept moving from place to place to place, and we'd say, the camping ban's over, and we kind of escalated. We put our tents across from some wealthy condos up on River Place, and what happened eventually was we negotiated with the city. There are about 3,500 to 4,000 homeless people here. There are 1,500 homeless kids here, and what happened is we negotiated with the city. We fought like hell for 80 people. The city wanted to give us 45. We ended up with 60. So the situation now is you have 60 people who are allowed to live in relative peace. Do you know what I mean? Who are allowed to camp in relative peace in a place called Dignity Village, and we've got good security. Everyone's safe there. We've got portalettes, all that kind of stuff. But the rest of the community still has to sort of still hide out in bushes, and because of the way, people are treated here, and it's no good. It's not really a good situation, but it's better. So it's for 60 people, it's pretty legal, you know what I mean? For the rest of the people in the homeless community, it's not.
And right? That's 60 out of what, 3,000 or 4,000?
There's probably a couple thousand people sleeping out on any given night. On the weekends, I work down in the Saturday market, and I kind of have to scuffle for a place then, because in Dignity, right, we're at the end of the bus line, we're kind of transportationally challenged, so sometimes I sleep under the old bridge where I used to sleep, do you know what I mean? On those nights when I come down to work, because I only make $70 a week.
Mm-hmm.
bunch of us that work at the market.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask Larry Templeton here on the Santa Cruz end to kind of give a little bit of the history of Camp Paradise and talk about how he went from a kind of a concealed illegal status to a status of community support that was still illegal and still being harassed and still being pursued in the courts, but that, you know, certainly changed. Here you go, Larry.
How you doing, Jack?
Yeah, man. All right, Larry. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing good. Doing good. Keeping busy.
I know you guys work hard down there.
Oh, yeah, we do.
I've looked at your literature, you know.
Yeah.
Listen, I regret not coming by, but we got kind of lost.
Yeah, that's what I heard. I
had a very tight timeline, man. I really want to come and see your place.
Well, we want to see you, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, the thing about Camp Paradise, when we first started, there was a lot of trash down here in our area and stuff, and there was a lot of drug traffic going on, a lot of using going on, a lot of dealing. And in the neighborhood, that's everybody, as we walked by, we were being considered one of the other people that was causing problems in the neighborhood. And we just got tired of being known as that group of people, so we made a stand to have a drug and alcohol free camp. And as we started out with about 15 people that first wanted this. And then as people got the earful about Camp Paradise and found out what we were all about, it started becoming more. Then when Seeley found us, he came in and started giving us warnings that we had to be moving. And just like I asked Seeley, I says, ain't this public land? It don't belong to nobody, it belongs to the public. And when I asked him if we were public, he said no. So I said, well, then we will go to the houses into the community. To one of the community members, Carl Wilson, stood up for us and started talking to the neighbors to see how the neighbors felt about Camp Paradise being down here after we'd done enough cleanup in the neighborhood, showing them that we was completely different. We were wanting to help. And we got the community behind us, which kind of stopped the police from harassing us and stuff. And when we did know the police were going to come, the newspapers here in Santa Cruz would show up before they did or while they were there. And that kind of disturbed the police from doing any violence as they would, you know, usually try to pull with the tents, jerking them down or cutting them or whatever. And we had our attorney there, Paul Sanford, and another Chris Fredrickson that was here with us. So they didn't get away with too much, and we kept fighting and kept fighting. Now there's still a whole bunch of people here in Santa Cruz that still don't have a safe place to sleep. Camp Paradise does, thanks to the Santa Cruz Service Corps joining in with us. Now we have 7 acres out at this church land that we're living on, and we're doing gardening now. We're starting our own greenhouse. The garden's getting better. It's a lot easier to sleep, and I wish just other people could get what we have. And I wish the city would change their minds and give a good chunk of land to the homeless people. They don't have to build a building. All they got to do is just give a piece of land. We're happy outside.
Yeah, I think. Do you want to say something at that end?
Well, yeah. You know, I see what Larry's doing down there. I got some literature from Larry. The kind of work they're doing, you know, they have trailers and they're doing.
Speak up if you can, Jack.
They're doing work around other people's, you know, property and stuff there, you know, doing cleanup work and, you know, lawn and garden service and stuff like that. And it's great stuff they're doing down there. You know, I imagine everyone's proceeding and developing. And I'd like to say much love and respect to the crew down there because I really respect what you're doing. And, you know, I'm really just our timeline. You know, I really wanted to come down and see you guys down there. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us did up here. Mm-hmm. But you guys are lucky, man. You got Chris Fredrickson.
Yeah.
Got a lawyer in the crew. So, you know, yeah. That's really a blessing.
Well, you always come for another vacation.
He says, come on down for another vacation.
Well, you guys are always welcome up here, man.
Yeah, we're going to have to. But it's cold, ain't it?
Yo, no, man.
All right. Hey, if you can actually hear people in the studio, that's great. Let me ask someone who hasn't spoken at this end, Jack, to have a word here. Tom Shaver has put in hundreds of hours trying to put together community protection and support for Camp Paradise, and more important, for an organization that would eventually allow other groups to do what Camp Paradise has done by doing conservation work in the parks, getting some property where they can you know, I'm not even asking for free property. They're willing to lease the property in order to have legal places to sleep. Part of this is sort of, I've been critical of this on occasion because I don't think people should have to do slave labor in order to sleep. I mean, I just don't see that as, you know, so, I mean, I think that if the city has not got shelter for people, then people should have to be able to sleep where they can, provided they're not violating other laws. It's always been my line. But Tom here has been working with the Santa Cruz Service Corps, which I developed. He went through a variety of incarnations trying to work with different organizations to cover Camp Paradise, because nonprofits in this town apparently are holy writ with the city council, and if you can get a nonprofit behind you, the city council sort of has to take a step or two back. And let me give you time to talk a little bit about that. Again, I would like to keep pushing for the focus of what about the broader homeless community, because we have a special select group of people at Dignity Village and Camp Paradise who have some security, but the vast majority of homeless people do not. How can we give our experience, both as a house person like I am and folks in tents like you are, to change this? Here's Tom.
Hey there, Portland. How's it going?
Yo. How you doing, Tom?
All right. Well, God, there's so much to talk about. I think first I'd like to talk about how it's been a real intractable issue politically. The sleeping ban, and there's a will on the part of the city council to do something about it, but whenever it comes up, you know, actually getting rid of the sleeping ban or whatever, something happens to knock it down. So just creating some momentum is what I've been trying to do on the city council to do something and build on that. And as I've during the process of this, I've gotten a lot of people on the city council to step forward. In fact, there was a city council member, Ed Porter, who was looking at the Dignity Village, or the stuff that the city council was coming up with to support Dignity Village and establish that, the legal basis for that. So we were working on that for a while, and then and it's really amazing to get unanimous votes to keep going on with the process. And what we finally came up with was this. Also in the process, people in the from the community talking about their fears of homeless people burning their houses down or coming in, all of the crazy, you know, fears that people have. And so what I've been seeing with how Camp Paradise came and got on the good side of neighbors is that we're shifting the public impression of who homeless people are, and that's going to have a big impact on homelessness in general, and that's a big support to the larger homeless community. Just dealing with the general racism against homeless people, showing people that people who just because you don't have a house doesn't mean you're not a valuable member of the society. And so, as we go around, and we've been showing that at the church where we're at right now. The church, the congregation, loves what they're doing there and starting to do landscaping in the neighborhood. Like, there's this one woman who was totally against this group of homeless people being in the area. And so Larry went and talked to her and asked her if she could repair her fence and do some yard work for her. And now she's talking to other churches about, you know, how they could have the center camp in their churches, and so what I see this is you know, sort of my future vision for this is that we can have people in camps in different parts of the community in small numbers of people where it's like a community where people can get to know each other, and that we can invite new people to come in to stay temporarily, but there's a core of people that are there for quite a long time, and sort of neighborhood by neighborhood changing people's impressions of people without without homes. And even going beyond that and saying, what I look at it is that the people being in camps, not living in a big flashy house, living simply, challenges people's notions of being prosperous and sort of the American dream in our society, which is killing the earth. You know, this huge consumerism that's not healthy for the planet. And by demonstrating how people can live simple, fulfilled lives and make a difference in our communities, that we can have a huge impact on society in general. So that's where I'm looking with this.
any reactions from folks up in Portland to what we've been saying down here?
Yeah, your question is how do we help everybody else who's not in a protected area like a camp yep. or a village or or somewhere? And one of the things we have here in Portland is if the ordinance says it's unlawful for any person to camp in or upon any public property or public right-of-way unless, and here's our opportunity here, unless otherwise specifically authorized by this code or by declaration of the mayor in emergency circumstances. So if everybody created an emergency circumstance by needing shelter all of a sudden or on one night or for a certain amount of time, then the mayor would have to issue housing vouchers or some type of emergency vouchers for hotels or something, and then it wouldn't be illegal in that under that circumstance.
Mm-hmm. And this has not been tried before, and it's now something you're prepared to try?
Well, yeah, let me take up the rest of Tom Shaver's question. And much respect to Tom Shaver. Tom Shaver, as I see it, is kind of equivalent to John Hubbard up here, because Tom helped get the 501c3, and Tom is aware of things. You know, I can sense this with Tom more than speaking to him, because we only spoke briefly, but he realizes, you know, the intractability of the problem as the politicians kind of face it. And basically, you know, we have a 501c3 now, you know, the village, and basically it's to educate, you know, to make people aware that we all put our trousers on the same, you know, one leg at a time, and, you know, we're not that much different from other people. But yeah, we've kind of looked at that strategy, you know, that emergency thing, and it's always sort of been like a back pocket strategy with us.
Well, you don't really need a strategy, Jack, because you actually have a legal place to go.
I know.
You know, we're talking about really the majority of the homeless people, right?
The majority of people. I mean, I know up in Toronto they look at it. Kathy Crow up there, you know, she's part of a disaster relief effort up there. And in countries where, you know, because of globalization, where the problem has just gotten huge fairly recently over the last 20 years, you know, they're looking at it in terms of a disaster up there, and people are more on page with that because, you know, they're used to having a safety net up there. And people are sort of less, they seem less on with it down here because, I mean, in this country anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I'll leave that. I'll pass that to someone else.
Okay.
Can I ask Robert?
Oh, sorry.
Sure. I'm going to introduce Adam as jumping on a bit here to put some 2 cents in.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to add something that might be obvious, and that Camp Paradise and Dignity are they're minor miracles, and they're a result of a lot of hard work, and they're amazing accomplishments, but they can also, we need to be aware that they can be convenient excuses for the city not to do anything else about homelessness. You know, they, in Portland, they can point to Camp Dignity and say, look what we've done, we're doing so much good work, while they try to sneak in the back door these anti-homelessness laws. And not work on affordable housing or child care
right.
or treatment on demand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's, and it sounds like y'all in Santa Cruz are taking some first steps to move beyond that. And I think that communities like this are the first step in making, you know, global change. And you know, once you have something like this established, you have to keep the revolution rolling. And and move on, and it sounds like you guys are doing that in Santa Cruz, which is great.
Well, you know, traditionally, if you look back in 1994 in Berkeley, they had a huge appropriation for shelters for people, and then in the same breath they passed the anti-homeless laws. And I see the same kind of process continuing. They talk about, in San Francisco, bringing in, well, they're actually talking about cutting back assistance for people in San Francisco, but they're doing so under the guise of, oh, we're going to do it better, and we're going to make sure they don't squander their money on hotel rooms by giving them vouchers instead of money, when, of course, there isn't adequate hotel space for even a fraction of the homeless people. But in Santa Cruz, maybe we can do a little Santa Cruz kind of roundup here. There's the additional problem of frictions that happen in the homeless community. Homeless people see one group of people being treated in what appears to be in a favoritistic special way. Camp Paradise, Dignity Village, Isla Vista in Southern California, where they are, you know, they've come together and they are treated with special kid gloves, partially because I think the authorities do not want them leading a civil rights struggle. They want them to say, look, we'll give you this little plot of ground off to the side, just lay over and lay down and shut up. You know, just keep a low profile. Work with us on the slow track and let the rest of these people, you know, dry out in the wind. What's the answer to that? Any thoughts on that here? Anybody want to make any comments on that one?
Yeah, man, to hell with that. We're not going that way. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? What we're doing is we're creating a model for other people to use in other places, and we don't forget where the hell we came from. Our roots. Our roots are on the street. You know what I mean? And we're looking at that very problem, you know, being perceived as kind of like upper middle homeless or some bullshit like that, just because we have, you know, some privilege with the damn city, and we're trying to do more outreach into the rest of the homeless community from where we are. We're looking at strategies how to do that, because that's absolute bullshit, you know.
Well, the question, though, is, I mean, you have a lot of people who are homeless out there aren't activists. They just want to be able to goddamn go to sleep at night without being hassled. They want a place to have the possessions in the day, their pets, so they're not being harassed and threatened with impoundment or destruction. And you say to them, well, why don't you come downtown and do a march against the sleeping ban? They say, look, we got lives to live. We got jobs to go to. Don't ask us to come on and end the sleeping ban. We're having enough trouble just maintaining where we're at. Any thoughts on that?
You know,
Mike,
here's Larry.
Okay.
Mike's next.
Oh, hey, are you still there?
Yep.
Okay, hey. Yeah, I don't know what Roger's doing. He just pushed another button. I'm getting another call. No, but what Jack was saying, you know, we know where we come from. Yeah, we started a very good thing. And, you know, I don't know if you guys are going through the same thing that Camp Paradise is. We're getting special treatment and shit like that. We've busted our butts to get this far, you know, and just like Jack and Dignity there, we have made a model camp for people to try to follow. We've even tried to go a little bit here in Santa Cruz by giving another camp a chance, you know. I can't get 15 people to get off their butts here in Santa Cruz that wants to try to make it where we've made it and do a little bit of volunteer work, you know. Then they want to sit around and they want to bitch about what they got coming. And when we sat around, we went out in the neighborhoods, we went out and cleaned up, you know. And if they want what we have, they got to get off their butts like we did and continue their lives like we did.
Yeah, that's how it is for us. We've got like Dignity Village now. We've got about like 25 people that are working hard.
Yeah.
Hard. Do you know what I mean? And pushing the whole thing. But it started with fewer people, and there are more and more people coming on, and more people willing to take a little piece. And if everyone grabs a piece, one person can't do it
exactly
by himself, you know, because it's too large. But if we all kind of work together, and that's what seems to be catching on up here.
Yeah.
It seems to be catching and beginning in the place. You know what I mean? But I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Other people bitch and complain about
it. Yeah, you know, like, you know,
they won't get off their
exactly. You know, Camp Paradise was noted for all the community service we were doing. And we were even going to let people come into our camp. And, you know, they won't even volunteer a couple hours just to be able to have a place to sleep. You know, that's something we've been running to here in Santa Cruz.
Yeah,
a lot of them won't do that.
I hear you, Larry.
Yeah, something else that helps is when you do have some type of activity going on, like a direct action, like the Out of the Doorway campaign.
Right.
Before Dignity Village and Camp dignity, it creates a distraction. They concentrate on that, and they leave the other people alone a lot of times.
Uh-huh.
And so that's one way that you're able to help the people that aren't the activists or willing to go out or have a lot to lose. And so often while we were doing one type of camp out, we sometimes had other places where we had people that were more vulnerable in some other place that they were safe. And so we created a distraction sometimes.
Right, okay.
Hey, this is Patty. And I want to say that the alternative press, such as Street Roots, those newspapers that particularly have a mission to advocate the plight of the poorest of the poor and the homeless, have an obligation to be supportive of all of the homeless in their community, whether in a tent city or whether they're out on the street. And
right.
So at a recent board meeting, we reaffirmed at Street Roots our commitment to supporting Dignity Village, and also we constantly ask for feedback from our vendors out on the street. When they're selling papers, we ask them what kinds of articles the readers are asking for, and they're constantly wanting Dignity Village right up front. So we're pledged to just keep those articles out there in our newspaper every month that just encompass all of the needs of our homeless individuals and families, Dignity Village and out on the street.
Indeed, but it's easier said than done sometimes, it seems to me. I mean, first of all, you have the perception of people who are homeless that some people are getting special privileges. Some people have a nonprofit cover and others don't. That's one. And then you get the reality that there is the political reality that for Tom Shaver to stand up and erect a tent city downtown for other homeless people may challenge whatever kind of credit he has with Ed Porter and other council members here in Santa Cruz who are perhaps offering to help him with the Santa Cruz Service Corps. Am I wrong about that, Tom?
Well, I mean, there's a reluctance on the city council to open up a large campground and open up, we're trying to get them to open up other areas of public land. And the concept we're working with is the camps being caretakers, these people being caretakers of public land or whatever area that we're working on. And that requires, you know, saying that, making a promise and fulfilling it and developing good relationships with the people that we're working with. And just sort of going out and just raising hell for no particular reason just doesn't fit in with that. If there was some particular injustice that was happening, we'd be there, certainly. But we need to think strategically about how to make change politically. And right now, what we're working on is developing more and more campgrounds and demonstrating to the city, because there have been other campgrounds that have been set up in Santa Cruz and were considered failures. And so we've got a sort of, there's a tide that we need to push back in terms of that impression. So that's what we're working on right now. We need to think strategically about how we go about it.
Tom, I think it's really important. Mm-hmm. We're not seeing a lot of that kind of
up
here.
Yeah.
About Camp Dignity, that they're favored in any way.
Mm-hmm.
They have the same struggles that people outside their village are having, but I think it's really important to get city and county officials on your board. Sit down at the table with them. Have them sit down at the table with you in your place, and then they will pull away that curtain that has been drawn across your personhood and labeled you as homeless,
mm-hmm.
and see you for who you are and what you are, normal people,
mm-hmm.
who are intelligent and capable and have life experiences to offer.
Right.
I'd like to say, this is Jack Tafari. I'd like to say I'm on with Tom about looking at things strategically and how to get things done, how to accomplish
without going too much into it, we're looking at a way now where we can get to two places without splitting ourselves up. But we're looking at a way now. It's kind of what came out of Seattle, the win up there, because that's one of the benefits of getting together, you know, looking at exactly what happened. And we've got some great lawyers here, and I hope you can get hooked up with other great lawyers up and down the coast, like Adam and Glenn Maurer, and, you know, look at our strategies and look at the whole thing strategically and see how we can work together up and down the coast to push the whole thing forward. It seems like tent cities are kind of springing up like mushrooms through necessity. You know, they meet a certain need, and you know, there's a certain niche that you know they fit into, and you know, I think it's important that you know we develop and develop further. And, our website says, you know, that the games that we make and the work that we do, we post on there for the use of other people. We're quite copyleft. I mean, that's for everyone to use. And, you know, we're not trying to keep it for ourselves, but it's a kind of model.
Sorry, Jack. You have such a soft-spoken voice there. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM in Santa Cruz, and you could be tuned to KBOO, for all I know, up there up north. This is a special two-hour show with folks from Portland and Santa Cruz discussing decriminalizing the right to sleep and the right to survive for homeless people and how this can be done through encampments and villages and dignity groupings where people support each other and the kinds of problems that arise there. And at one end we have in the studio Tom Shaver, the Santa Cruz Service Corps, Chris Fredrickson, attorney, Chris, resident of Camp Paradise, and Larry Templeton, Camp Paradise co-founder, as well as myself, Robert Norris. I'm your host. And at the other end, who's there in the studio?
Mike D.
Watchman D. Zord.
Yeah, Jack Tafari.
Adam R.
Hey, so quite a full contingent. You can't phone into this show today because the one phone line is being taken up with all of us, and we are probably overheating the phone line. Again, playing devil's advocate in this situation, up in Portland, Oregon, you have achieved a semi-legal status for Camp Paradise. In fact, it was almost official. I saw the tape from the Portland City Council meeting last summer when, I guess, Mayor Katz kind of, based upon your sustaining power and based upon the Gallagher decision and the fact that they had no real legal basis for going after you and based upon the needs, which were pretty obvious probably to a lot of Portland people that, you know, they looked like complete assholes going after people for sleeping when there were no legal places for people to sleep, particularly people who got together in a way that